So this is one of the great questions of social psychology for the better part of the 20th century on into the 21st. How do we ease racial prejudice? How do we promote religious tolerance? Acceptance of people whose sexual orientations are different from ours, people with mental health issues, etc., right? This isn't about mental illness. Well, education is good, but again, just learning the facts about mental illness might actually reinforce stereotypes. The essential ingredient identified in 1954 by the eminent psychologist Gordon Alport in his book, The Nature of Prejudice, was contact. If I have contact with you or other fellow human beings, above all else, that contact is going to show that we have some essential similarities. I might identify with you as opposed to you're in the out group. You're on the other side of the river. You're in the other tribe. You're in the different religious group. Contact breeds acceptance, familiarization, and empathy. Now, the big debate has been, is all contact equally good or are some forms better than others? Back in Victorian England, what did the nobility and the upper crust do on some Sundays? They toured the Bedlam Insane Asylum for a fee as if they were going to a zoo and watched the raving patients. It's incredible. That's probably not the kind of contact that breeds empathy and compassion, right?
Yeah, right.
Contact should be between people more or less as equals.
Yeah.
Contact should be every day rather than the visit to the institution on a Sunday or observing the special needs classroom. The debate has gone on. What kinds of contact are better? Certainly some kinds of contact are better than others. But the overwhelming finding across many, many studies, you can read about it in social psychology textbooks, is any contact is better than no contact. If it's apartheid, if it's separation, if it's toxic, then it's us versus them. It's in-group versus out-group. Contact forces the natural humanity to come out. And again, more equal contact is obviously better than less equal contact, et cetera.
Right. Yeah.
But how do you know? I mean, so here's an interesting part of stigma theory. If you and I have different skin colors, pretty hard to hide that, unless you put a lot of makeup on, right?
Yeah.
So those are overt, non-concealable stigmas. But you've disclosed a history of depression, and I've disclosed a major family history of many forms of mental illness and my own depressions, etc. But we could have interacted today, and I could have chosen not to say a word about it.
Mm-hmm.
You could have interacted with me and chosen not to say a word about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd think, well, gee, if the stigma is overt, it's got to be worse because you can't hide your long blonde hair and my short gray hair. You can't hide your skin color. So these concealable stigmas should be easier to manage, or are they? Well, if I decided not to tell you, maybe I'd be worried the whole time that you would have figured Steve out. You would have said, boy, his dad had bipolar disorder and he's been depressed off and on. And so if I'm worried about what you're thinking the whole time, our interaction isn't very authentic because I'm worried about being outed, right?
Yeah, yep.
So disclosure, we talked about this a little while ago. I feel comfortable because I've formed a better identity, I've practiced and rehearsed, I've received support, I think it's the right timing to have disclosed to you, takes away that artificial anxiety of, oh my God, Madison's going to find me out. And so we have this kind of false interaction.
Yeah.
True interactions, people are pretty good at perceiving what's a true authentic interaction versus a fakier one. And
yeah.
So disclosure goes behind, undergirds the kinds of interactions and contact that take away stigma. Make sense?
Wow. Yes, completely. Yeah, that completely makes sense. And I've experienced that in my own life too, with my friends and when we have that disclosure, it actually breeds more connection and more humanity between each other. It's so simple, but it's so not easy, I guess, for a lot of us to implement.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like anything that's you know, very impactful.
There anything that's deeply human and impactful and you think might alter how other people perceive you. I mean, we all get kind of, we play close to the vest around that until we trust. And so, you know, again, disclosure, timing and rehearsal. Maybe I don't wear that sandwich board on the streets, but maybe I don't wait for the rest of my life either. I find it easier the more experience I get at disclosing to think that I can be trusted and accepted.
I love that. And I love too how you talked about the timeline and how you don't, like, every interaction doesn't have to be disclosure, but also you don't have to never disclose ever.
That's right.
It's finding that timing, and the trust, which is, for our listeners and even for me hearing that, it's very helpful.